In this lecture of Component 2, Unit 8, we will continue our discussion of privacy, confidentiality, and security. We will delve into the details of the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, HIPAA, privacy and security rules, building on the general history, in particular, identifier standards and transaction standards covered in previous lectures. In this lecture, we will talk about the HIPAA privacy rule, followed by the HIPAA security rule in the next lecture. These rules went into effect in 2003 and 2005, respectively. However, there was a substantial revision to HIPAA with the Health Information Technology for Economic and Clinical Health Act, or HITECH legislation, which some referred to as HIPAA 2. The details of HIPAA are in a posting in the U.S. Federal Register, and the Department of Health and Human Services Office of Civil Rights maintains a website devoted to privacy and all of the HIPAA rules and their implications. There are many summaries available on the HIPAA rules, several of which are listed on this slide. The paper by ID experts presents a relatively concise overview. HIMSS Analytics focuses on how organizations might implement the rules. Bridgefront focuses on some of the legal implications, and the LAVA summary is focused more on the clinical side. All of these documents give a very detailed overview of what is in HIPAA 2, and of course, there are more summaries out there from other sources. Let's talk about the HIPAA privacy rule. If you work in a healthcare setting in the United States, you are probably familiar with this. For that matter, if you are a patient getting care in the United States, you have likely had a bit of exposure to the HIPAA privacy rule as well. The HIPAA privacy rule applies to so-called covered entities. One category of covered entities is healthcare providers, such as clinicians, hospitals, and clinics. Another category is health plans, such as health management organizations, HMOs, insurance companies, and others. It also applies to healthcare clearinghouses that deal with sensitive health information by billing services. A key point about HIPAA that leads to a lot of misconceptions is that the HIPAA privacy rule does not apply to treatment, payments, or operations, sometimes called TPO. There does not need to be a HIPAA-signed notice of privacy practices for the purpose of treatment. Probably the biggest misconception is when a patient is transferred from one institution to another, and a referring institution will not want to send the patient's information because they believe it violates HIPAA. But when a patient is transferred, it is within the legal rights of everyone involved in their health care to disclose information to each other for the care of the patient. The Notice of Privacy Practices is essentially an oath of privacy. An interesting webpage devoted to oaths of privacy in healthcare notes that physicians have been taking privacy seriously for quite some time. The Hippocratic Oath, or the Oath of Hippocrates, developed in the 5th century BC, requires a physician to state all that may come to my knowledge in the exercise of my profession or outside of my profession, or in daily commerce with men, which ought not to be spread abroad, I will keep secret and never reveal. Likewise, the more modern Declaration of Geneva, usually considered to be the modern-day replacement of the Hippocratic Oath, states that, I will respect the secrets which are confided in me, even after the patient has died. What is covered by the HIPAA privacy regulations? Basically, they covered protected health information, or PHI. This is information that is collected from the patient and created by a covered entity, such as a healthcare provider, clearinghouse, or health plan. It is individually identifiable and electronically transmitted, although since almost all information is, in some ways, put into electronic form these days, the HIPAA regulations extend to covered entities or business associates of the covered entities. For example, if you do business with a healthcare institution for whom the HIPAA regulations apply, then those regulations apply to your business as well. De-identified information is not covered, although we also discussed some issues in the previous lecture with so-called de-identified information. There are various levels of preemption. The federal HIPAA privacy law is a floor, meaning if state law is contrary to HIPAA, then HIPAA takes precedence. States do have the right to be more stringent about privacy, and they can also pass legislation with more rigorous privacy protection. In those cases, the state law takes precedence. What exactly falls under the Protected Health Information, or PHI? The HIPAA definition of protected health information is quite broad and comprehensive. The regulations define 19 different types of patient data that can be protected health information. Obviously, this includes information like name and address, but it also includes zip code, employer's email address, and telephone numbers, photographic images, social security number, medical record number, and any web URLs associated with the patient. Finally, any other unique identifying number, characteristic, or code is PHI as well. What are the key compliance areas for the HIPAA privacy rule? Healthcare organizations must post and inform patients of their notice of privacy practices. There are issues related to authorization of the use of protected health information. There are rules that apply to business associates. These have been strengthened in the HIPAA 2 rule. There are allowable disclosures. There are rules around marketing, and there are rules around physician and staff training. Finally, there are penalties for non-compliance with the privacy rules. In the slides that follow, we will talk about these areas. One of the cornerstones of the HIPAA privacy rule is the Notice of Privacy Practices, or NPP. If you have obtained healthcare in the United States in the last decade or so, you have come across an NPP and probably had to sign it. The NPP states what the rights are for the patient. Under the HIPAA privacy rule, the patient has the right to know the privacy practices of a covered entity, such as a physician practice or hospital. The notice should contain the uses and disclosures of personal health information, including those that extend beyond TPO. The NPP should also have a description of individual rights, as well as the legal duties of the covered entities. Part of the problem with these documents is that the readability of them is comparable to what is seen in medical journal articles. In other words, they are highly technical and are probably beyond the readability of 80% of the U.S. adult population. What are the physician requirements for obtaining the NPP consents? First, they must make a good faith effort to obtain at least acknowledgement of the notice of privacy practices during the first provision of in-person service. If this is not obtained, there is not a penalty, but a good faith effort should be made to obtain the NPP. Some other aspects of privacy practices are that they must be written in plain language, although we will see later that this is somewhat of an issue. Practices and organizations have to state that they reserve the right to change the notice of privacy practices. There must be some sort of complaint process by which a patient can challenge whether the privacy practices have been inappropriate. Every practice organization must designate a privacy official in the office, essentially a chief privacy officer. In smaller practices, this may be the office manager or perhaps one of the physicians in the practice. Listed on this slide is the link to the Oregon Health and Science University's Notice of Privacy Practices. You'll see on that site that the notice has been translated into numerous different languages. The HIPAA privacy rule has a process for the authorization of use of PHI for purposes other than TPO. An authorization must be obtained in this circumstance. The covered entity is not allowed to condition treatments of the patient on whether or not an individual gives authorization for use of PHI beyond TPO. When covered entities release PHI, they must ensure reasonable safeguards to limit the use to the minimum necessary standard, as defined by the statute from the Health and Human Services Office of Civil Rights. When authorizations are carried out, they have to include the following: the names of authorized persons making use of or disclosing the information, the description of the information. There needs to be an expiration date so the authorization does not last into perpetuity. The patient has the right to revoke the authorization and is given instructions on how to do so. The specific purpose of use or disclosure is stated. There must be a signature and date by the patient. HIPAA defines business associates and sets rules for their interactions with covered entities. These have been strengthened or upgraded in the HIPAA 2 regulations under the high-tech legislation. Business associates are agents, contractors, or others hired to do the work of or for covered entities that requires access to protected health information. These include billing companies and vendors, software vendors, etc. In the original HIPAA legislation, covered entities were just required to obtain what was called satisfactory assurances of privacy protections from business associates. In high-tech and HIPAA 2, these business associates are now required to essentially meet the same rules as covered entities. For example, each business associate must sign an agreement with the covered entity, stating that it will adhere to all of the HIPAA privacy rules. When business associates undergo a breach of information, they are subject to the same breach notification rules that were expanded under HIPAA 2. In addition, the definition of business associates has been expanded and includes health information exchanges, personal health record vendors who work with covered entities, and literally anyone who comes into contact with the covered entity's protected health information. What are some of the allowable disclosures outside of treatment, payment, and operations, or non-TPO? One area is research. The Department of Health and Human Services has a publication that describes what is allowed and not allowed under the HIPAA privacy rule. In general, authorization by the patient is required, and there is usually a clause that allows information to be used for research purposes in the Notice of Privacy Practices. However, there are some waivers that can be granted without the patient's explicit approval by either an institutional review board, also known as an IRB, or privacy board. The privacy rule states that when this authorization waiver is used, there must be no more than a minimal risk of disclosure of information, and that the research could not be practically conducted without the waiver and without access to personal health information. There are some public health disclosures that are allowed so that information gathered by public health agencies can be released. Information in specific areas such as child abuse, exposure to communicable diseases, and workforce surveillance can also be disclosed. Some other issues where disclosure is permitted include anything related to law enforcement, issues related to decedents, those who are deceased, and cadaveric tissue donation. Marketing is an issue, although again, when we start to try to codify the rules, we run into issues we never thought about. Marketing is defined in HIPAA as a communication about a product or service that encourages recipients of the communication to purchase or use the product or service. What about a healthcare provider who is recommending a treatment to a patient, or encouraging them to keep an appointment, or to refill a prescription? Those activities have been defined as outside the scope of marketing for providers. So when a provider recommends a treatment, that is not considered to be marketing. Likewise, notifying about appointments and prescription refills is not marketing either. Another aspect of the HIPAA privacy regulations is physician and staff training, which has been a substantial expense to healthcare organizations. The regulation states that practices and organizations must designate a privacy office, develop policies and procedures, provide privacy training to the workforce, and develop a system of sanctions for employees who violate the privacy law. Unfortunately, it is not clear that the expense has helped much. There is frustration when individuals have to complete HIPAA training at each and every organization they are associated with. For example, a researcher would have to complete similar HIPAA training at all of the institutions that they collaborate with, resulting in a lot of repetition. Obviously, the HIPAA privacy rule must have teeth. In fact, the original HIPAA privacy rule was criticized for the relatively modest penalties and minimal prosecutions that took place initially when the rule was launched. As such, high-tech, or HIPAA 2, increases the severity of penalties. While the original penalties were in the range of $10,000 to $25,000, there is now a tiered penalty structure, depending on the severity of violation, with penalties ranging from $25,000 up to $1.5 million. Another aspect of the penalties is that the legal concept of willful neglect can be applied when organizations are prosecuted for HIPAA violations. The new regulations also allow state attorney generals to sue under HIPAA in federal courts. In addition, enforcement of HIPAA has moved to the Department of Health and Human Services Office of Civil Rights, and they maintain a website referenced earlier that describes all of the rules and penalties. One question that often gets asked is whether the HIPAA privacy rule truly protects privacy. There has been a lot of work on different aspects of the HIPAA privacy rule, how well it works, how it can be strengthened, and so forth. Reviews in 2004, after the privacy rule was launched by the National Committee on Vital and Health Statistics, NCVHS, and the Government Accountability Office, found that adherence was actually less problematic than many had anticipated. The HIPAA privacy rule has now become part of healthcare delivery. One area where there have been many concerns is in the performing of clinical research. Some studies have documented, for example, that finding and accessing patients for research has become more difficult. Researchers themselves report more difficulty in doing their work and, at the same time, not believing that privacy is being substantially enhanced. This has led some organizations, in particular the Association of Academic Health Centers and the Institute of Medicine, to argue for revisions to the HIPAA privacy rule to make research easier. There also have been some assessments of the HIPAA privacy rule with regards to public health. In general, public health authorities are relatively satisfied with HIPAA and do not find it too onerous. One approach that has been advocated is that there should be less emphasis on patient consent and more emphasis on a framework that makes it easier to share appropriate TPO, with some modifications of how operations is defined, coupled with more rigorous restrictions on other uses, in particular marketing. There are other modifications to the HIPAA privacy rule in the high-tech legislation. One area concerns breach notification. Obviously, patients must be informed, but when the breach exceeds 500 patients, the local media or local press must be notified, as well as the Office of Civil Rights of the Department of Health and Human Services. In fact, they maintain a web page that lists all breaches of more than 500 patients, which you can access through the link on this slide. There are also some modifications that put more restrictions on disclosures. For example, when patients pay for medical care out of pocket instead of through their insurance, they can stipulate that information not be put into their medical record. There are also stricter rules for appropriate disclosures of treatment, payment, and operations. These must be tracked and records maintained for 3 years. In addition, covered entities that have electronic health records have to either provide or, if the patient requests, transmit protected health information in electronic format as the patient directs. Finally, one other cause allows patients to opt out of fundraising appeals.